We're going to begin with Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk. Where are we? Sorry. Perek Lamed, and Pasuk Aleph, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Aleph. All right, let's see here. It was disabled. Okay. I'm not able to share my screen with you. All right. So instead of wasting more time trying to work out the technical difficulties, I hope everybody has a chumash in front of them. All right. Vatomer Rachel. Vatera Rachel. Rachel sees. Ki lo yalda li Yaakov. Vatikane Rachel bachosa. And she is jealous of her sister. In other words, she sees that Leah has the bracha of many children, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and Rachel sees that her situation, and she is reflecting upon it, and she's saddened by her state of affairs, her barren state of affairs. Vatomer el Yaakov, hava li banim, give me children, v'im ayin, and if not, mesa anochi. And if not, well, can I ask you how you would translate that phrase? V'im ayin mesa anochi. Anybody?
If not, I'm dead.
If not what?
If not, I am dead or I will die.
Okay. All right. So that's one. Well, you just said two different things. You said, if not, I am dead. And if not, I will die. Do you mean those as the same, or do you mean those as differently? Because those are two different things you just said.
Meta is the present tense, but if she doesn't have any children, she will be dead forever.
So how are you translating it? Is it that I will die or that I am dead?
Rabbi Art Scroll says, give me children, otherwise I am dead.
Otherwise I am dead, okay?
I am dead.
All right. All right, so we have otherwise I am dead, and the other is otherwise I will die, or maybe I am dying. All right, in either case, this is rather strong terminology, and I guess the question that I would posit here is, I mean, does the expression of frustration, is it an appropriate expression of frustration, the language that she's using? Is that really the truth of human experience, that if one does not bear children, then they are dead?
Rabbi, can I give you the art scroll explanation?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I am dead. If you do not pray and gain children for me, I will remain childless and be regarded as dead. Or alternatively, knowing how much Jacob loved her, Rachel sought to frighten him by saying she would die from grief.
Okay. All right. So even Art Scroll is offering two interpretations of the translation as they give it. One, again, Ronnie, one is that she was basically just trying to say how grief-stricken she was. And the other was saying, what? Tell me the first one, that I am as...
She said, I will remain childless and be regarded as dead.
Will be regarded as dead. Okay.
Dead.
All right. Before we take a look at some of the mefarshim on this, anybody else want to share?
Well, there are two things that equate people to dead people. One, and a poor person, achshav kemes,
right,
and also doesn't have any children.
And also what?
And also doesn't have any children.
Okay. And so what does that mean to you, if that phrase that somebody who doesn't have children is equated as dead? What does that phrase even mean to you?
Don't ask me.
Okay. All right. So, okay. Okay, I accept that. All right. So if we don't know what it means, let's set that aside as inexplicable. So I'd like to take a look at Rachel's response here. And again, can't share my screen with you, but we'll start with Rashi. So Rashi says the following: Mesa Anochi, and if you have it in with you, you can take a look yourself. Mesa Anochi, Mikan l'mi she'ein lo banim chashuv kemes. Somebody who has no children, as Barbara just said, is considered as though they are dead. Now you can say that, but to say that without any explanation is, I think, somewhat troubling. What exactly does that even mean? What does that even mean? The Torah Tamima, or Baruch HaLevi Epstein, states the following: Yesh lomar kavanas ha'inyan. The meaning of this is, I'll just ask you if you folks can mute yourselves because I hear something in the background. So if you have something to say, feel free to unmute yourselves. But okay, so Yesh lomar kavanas ha'inyan. What is the idea here? Ki merutzas ha'chayim hu kiptil hanimshach me'avos labanim. The experience of life, or the trajectory of life, is like a thread that connects generation to generation. V'zeh she'ein lo banim, hare psil hachayim shelo nifsak v'have kemes. And so, if a person does not have children, the Torah Tamima understands this phraseology that the lifeline ends. And so the lifeline ending is perforce death. Okay? So Rabbi Yoshua is understanding Rachel's statement of the Im Ayin Mesa Anochi to be understood literally. And this interpretation of somebody who doesn't have children is like dead on some level. Is understanding Rachel's statement to be taken as a description, not just as a not just as some hyperbolic statement, when somebody's famished and they're saying, like, I'm dying of hunger. This is not just a way of expressing an extreme intensity of thought. But it's to be taken on some measure literally. I mean, not literally, literally that the person is actually dead, but there is some measure of death associated with this barren experience. Okay, that's how the Torah Tamima might. That's how the Torah Tamima understands this Rashi. The Rash. Hold on a second. This I have to work out this technical difficulty here, even though it'll take a second, but there we go. Otherwise, I don't have the sources in front of me. Okay. So that's what Rashi says. There are other Mefarshim, I think the Rashbam and others, who say that this is an expression, right? And I think this is what we might all have intuited as a possibility, that she doesn't really mean Mesa Anochi, that she's not really dead, she's not equivalent of dead. Death and her experience are in no way comparable, but she's really just trying to, it's an expression, and she's really trying to say how deeply, deeply and intensely sad and frustrated she feels. V'yim'ayin mesa anochi. Okay. And that's another way of looking at it. The Ksav Kabbalah says the following. Since I cannot fulfill the purpose which is designated to being a woman, hareini chashuva kemesa. So if I cannot fulfill my purpose in life, and says the Ksava Kabbalah, he understands that she's saying that my purpose in life is to bear children as a woman. Maybe not as a human being, but as a woman. Right? They're male human beings, they're female human beings. So as a human being, maybe I have some other purpose, but as a woman, that's my purpose. V'chayai einam chayim. My life is now meaningless. I don't want to say meaningless. My life is not even life. Umilat mesa ta'amo milarash hu lashon hove. The word mesa in Hebrew is there's mil'el and mil'ra. Mil'el means a word is accented on the earlier syllable, on the next to last or earlier syllable. That's mil'el. Mil'ra is when the accent is on the final syllable. So mesa might mean one thing, but mesa is present tense. So mesa mil'ra is how this should be understood, and therefore she is currently, presently in this state of dying. Oshahu toar kimo hamesa tamus uksiva kamesa anachashiva vana anichavtza b'misasi ve'avcharamos mechayim. That I wish I were dead. I desire death because my life is I prefer death over my life as is. All right, and if that's the case, the imkein havale lemei marbilashani asid. If that would be the, you know, that I wish I were to die, then the word should somehow reflect that. So up until now, what we've seen is that either this is an expression of just intensity of emotion, or on some level it means that my life is, there is, that my life as is no life, or, you know, or life comes to an end with me. I would like, however, to share with you something
What is my life worth?
What is my life worth? Right. So I want to share with you something that I saw in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Arama. I didn't see it in the original. Rabbi Yitzchak Arama wrote a book called Akedas Yitzchak. He's a 12th or 13th century, German. Ashkenaz commentary, and what he says is the following. He says that that every human being is a human being, and they might have additional aspects that define them on one level or another. But a Jewish woman, he says, has two purposes or two attributes of their life experience. One is to be an Eved Hashem, is to serve Hashem in any way, any way they can. The other is a woman, and only what a woman can do is to bear a child. And he says that Rachel confused her ability to have children with her definition of what it means to be a Jewish woman. While it is true that that bearing children is assigned to somebody who is a woman, but that is not the entirety of the person, says Rav Yitzchak Arama, and therefore the Akedas Yitzchak says her complaint to Yaakov was entirely misplaced, because it conflated something that is important, but not the entirety of the personality. And therefore, by conflating that, she misapprehended what it means to be a Jewish woman. And therefore, Vayichar af Yaakov Barachel, Yaakov gets angry at her. And he says, "Vayomer atachas Elokim anochi. Am I in place of God? Asher minami mimech priv baten. Am I the per, you know, I'm not the cause of this. You know, Hashem is the one who determines ultimately whether people have you know, have children or not. But I think that Yaakov's response of Ayichar Af, whether it was emotionally sensitive or not, does reflect a Rachel's very limited and confining definition of what it means to be a Jewish woman. And it's more than that. It's much more than that. And so while, you know, while we wish the blessing on all people and all women in particular, you know, to have the blessing of children, that's not the entirety of life. That's not the it's not the entirety of what it means to be a Jew or even a Jewish woman. And okay, so this dialogue here between between Rachel and Yaakov, I think, is a particularly important one, especially in our day and age, when questions of definitions of what it means to be a Jewish woman are in the forefront. And to the extent that, you know, some might have the view that the definition of a Jewish woman means bearing children, and beyond that, you know, is not really so significant, at least the Akedas Yitzchak would take a great, great issue with that. Okay, so we move now to the second part of what I wanted to talk about today. Before we do that, anybody have any comments just on this piece? Because we're going to move to a totally different discussion. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning of the Sedra. Go back to the beginning of the Sedra. We're going to read a lot of Psukim here and do sort of running commentary as we go through the Psukim. Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheva vayelech Charana. Yaakov leaves Beersheva and he goes to Charan. Charan is Vayifka b'makom, and he encounters the place. Vayalan sham kiva hashemesh. And he lies down. It was getting dark, and he makes a little place for him to sleep. He puts the rocks under his head, and he goes to sleep. Vayachalom, and here he has a dream. Vihine sulam mutzav arza, and here there is a ladder, which is entrenched, which is stuck into the ground. V'rosho magia hashamayma, and the top of the ladder is touching the heavens. And the angels of God are going up and down this ladder. Now, it's interesting to point out, the word in biblical Hebrew, when there's a hey at the end of the word, it means towards something. So if I want to say shamayma, towards the heaven, towards shamayim, I say shamayma. If I want to say towards the, the trajectory is towards the land, I will say artsa. So we have here something which is interesting. We have here a ladder, which is artsa, its trajectory is towards the land, and is shamayma, and its trajectory is towards the heavens. So where is its trajectory, right? So I think that's, the pasuk says, v'hinei malachei Elohim olam v'yardim bo. This is a ladder that has two trajectories on it. And it's not just telling us, I think, about the angels that are going up and down, trajectory up and trajectory down, but it is telling us that there is importance to life in the here and the now, this material physical world in which we live, the finite world in which Hashem has placed us, Olam Hazeh, that world has great significance because that is the trajectory of the Shamayim towards the Aretz, right? The heavens is faced towards the Aretz, towards the land. That means that the land is not, the Olam Hazeh is not simply a means towards Olam Haba, if you use that as a metaphor. The land is also the goal of Shamayim, of Olam Haba, as it were. In other words, there is value to this finite world in which we live, which makes it inherently meaningful. And what's it make? It's not just simply, you know, how do I get to Olam Haba? There's something valuable just in being here. Hashem has endowed this place, and the purpose is to bring Shamayim into the finite worlds, is to bring the divine message, the divine experience, divine consciousness, spiritual meaning, purpose, depth, profundity, all of that into this world. A world of Olam Haba without Olam Hazeh, a world of Shamayim without Aretz, may be incomplete. V'hineh Hashem nitzav alav, God is on top of that ladder, and he's focused downwards. Vayomar, and he said, Ani Hashem Elokei Avraham Avicha, God speaks to Yaakov in the dream, and he gives him the blessing of children, and he gives him the blessing of the land of Israel, and he gives him the blessing of progeny. V'hineh Anochi imach, and he promises him, he gives him the blessing of protection. Shmarticha b'chol asher teleich, I will guard, I will protect you wherever you go on your journey. Pasuk 16, Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso Vayomar. Yaakov awakens from his sleep, and he says, Achen yesh Hashem ha-makom hazeh v'anochi lo yadati. Behold, there is God in this space, and I didn't even know it. So, how does your, if you're using an English translation, how exactly does it translate Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso? I'm curious.
He woke up from his sleep.
Vayikatz is he woke up. Mishnaso is from me, shinaso, from his sleep. Okay? So he was woke, right? He was a woke Jew. In the sense, Vayomer achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. Apparently, he had this insight, right? It's not simply that he woke up from his sleep. He was awakened to a reality, and he had insight. And the reality that he was awakened to, is that there is Hashem in this space, meaning that that Hashem is not in Shamayim and I'm in the Aretz, or Hashem is not designated in a particular place. I mean, after all, he's in Charan, right? At least in the pshat of the psukim, you know, he goes to Charan. Now maybe he's not actually in Charan, but nevertheless, Achen yesh Hashem ha-makom hazeh. Does it mean that? Oh, I didn't realize God was in this space. So if we're talking about the land of Israel, so what does it mean? I didn't know that God was in the land of Israel. That is, you know, Hashem's space, as it were. But what it means is that Achen manor ha-makom hazeh. How wondrous is this? Achen yesh Hashem ha-makom hazeh. Wow. God is in this place, meaning this mundane experience that I thought was just, you know, sleeping along the side of the road, Hashem is even there. Va'anochi lo yadati. I did not have this cognizance beforehand. So Yaakov was woke. He was a woke Jew. Yeah, he woke mi shnaso. And it doesn't even necessarily mean his physical slumber, but it means he was asleep to a reality. And now he's awakened to this reality that the presence of Hashem can be anywhere. Now, there is another approach to what Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso means. So the word Mishnaso can mean mi shnaso, from his sleep. Or the word Mishnaso can mean, yeah, Judy, what do you want to say?
From his ears, that it is his sleep that woke him up.
Vayikatz Yaakov.
The dream, basically.
Right, the dream. The dream is what caused him to be awakened. Okay, Vayikatz Yaakov. So he's not that he awoke from his dream, but his dream caused him to be awakened. Right, having this new understanding, this appreciation of Hashem in my life. Now I have, the dream has now caused me to have a new perspective on life. But there's yet a third approach here. Vayikatz Yaakov, the word Vayikatz and Mishnaso do not mean awoken and does not mean from sleep. Mishnaso can mean from sleep, but it can also mean one word. Anybody know what the word Mishnah means?
Learning.
Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnah so. Yaakov did something regarding his Mishnah. Mishnah, not from his Shena, but Mishnah. His Mishnah, Mishnah Shalom, his Mishnah, his learning, his understanding, his awareness. So what does Vayikatz mean? So Vayikatz doesn't mean that he awoke, that he was awoken. He was awakened.
It also mean a sting.
Like what?
A sting.
A sting, like a coat, or when Sarah says, when Rivka says, "Katzti b'chayai," right? Was it Rivka or Rachel? It says, "Katzti b'chayai." I'm confused here for a second. It says,
okay.
What?
Rivka.
Rivka, right. That's what I thought. Okay. Rivka says, "Katzti b'chayai," right? I'm disgusted with my, you know, with my life. I want my life to end, right? Katzti b'chayai, right? Because you know she might lose her children on that day, so she's sort of like disgusted by this. Her life is she's upset and angry. And vayikatz Yaakov mishnaso. Yaakov is I'm going to use the language here. Yaakov is disgusted, as it were. Or he's finished. He's done with Mishnah. So, Mishnah, the way he understood his perspective on life, and now he has a new perspective on life. And his new perspective on life is that Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. It's about having divine consciousness. Okay. Yaakov gets up in the morning. Pasuk 19. He names the place Beisel. He invests the place with the name of Hashem. Ulam luz shem ha'ir la'rishona. Originally, it had some other name, maybe a pagan name, but he's saying my new perspective on life is Hashem is. Hashem is present. Now, with that new perspective, Pasuk 20, Vayidar Yaakov neder l'emor, he takes a vow, and he says, not if, but when God will be with me on my journey, and he will give me what I need, and he will protect me, and he will return me to the house of my father in peace. This monument I'm making will indeed be the house of Hashem, as it were. I vow that I will give a tenth of all my material possessions. So here he is understanding, taking this new understanding of life, that God is not in the heavens, God is not, you know, just in Eretz Yisrael, because he's now about to leave the land of Israel. God is really present wherever we let him in. God is present wherever we are conscious of his presence. That's the Kutzker Rebbe, that Hashem is present, wherever we let him in, that's where God is. And this is a perfect way for him to start his journey outside of Israel. Right, his journey outside of the cocoon of his parents' home, the journey outside of the place of Avraham, of Yitzchak. This is, you know, far, far out in the world. And now that he goes out in the world, what we're going to see is his whole journey here is about making one deal after another. And I want you to sort of keep that in mind, and I wonder about what this theme is that keeps coming up in Yaakov's life. And here is the first deal that he makes right now. Deal number one. Let's make a deal. He says to Hashem, Im Yalokim Yadi, when you will be with me and you will fulfill everything and you will be kind to me and you will do everything, Aser Asrenulach, I will respond in kind and I will give a tenth of everything that I own to dedicate to Hashem. That's deal number one. But it's not the final deal that he makes. Vayisa Yaakov Raglav Eilach Artza B'nei Kedem. He goes eastward. Vayar V'hinei Be'er Basadev V'hinei Shloshah Drei Tzon Rov Tzim Aleha. He sees these shepherds in the field. and there's a and there's well, a well with water, and the well is covered with the covering stone, and they're all gathered there. Pasuk 4. Vayomer lahem Yaakov achai me'ayan atem. He says, my brothers, you know, from where are you from? And they say, we're from Charan. Oh, from Charan? Vayomer lahem, ayidatem es Lavan ben Nachor. You know Lavan, the son of Nachor? And it says, sure, we know him. Vayomer lahem ha-shalom lo, how is he? He's good. And he has a daughter, Rachel, and she's coming. And before you know it, there she is. Pasuk 8. Vayomer lo nuchal, he says, why don't you give the animals to drink from the well? Well, we can't. We don't have enough people here, or we don't have the requisite quorum to open up the well. Odenim daberi mahem Rachel ba, she shows up, and vayihi kasher Yaakov es Rachel bas Lavan, when he sees her, he approaches and he removes the stone from the well top, and vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel, and he kisses her. And he cries. Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel, and Yaakov says to Rachel, I'm your uncle. And she runs to tell her father. Pasuk 14. Vayomer lo Lavan, Lavan says to him, you're my flesh and blood. Stick around for a while. And Lavan says to Yaakov, why don't you work for me? But don't work for me for free. I'll pay you. And here is deal number two. Yaakov says to him, "Lavan shte banos, ve'enei le'arakos, vayehav Yaakov es Rachel." And Yaakov says to Lavan, "I'll work for you for 7 years, but in payment, I want your daughter Rachel." Deal number two. Lavan responds to him, and Lavan says, "Sure, no problem." Vayesof Lavan es kol anshei hamakom vayas mishteh. He gathers the people. They have a feast. Vayihi ba'erev, and in that evening, vayikach es Leah bito. He takes Leah, and he makes the old switcheroo, and he marries Leah instead of Rachel. And then in the morning, when Yaakov realizes what happened, Vayomer Lavan, Mazos Asisa li halo b'rachel avadati yimach. What are you doing? I worked for, this was not the deal. This was not the deal. The deal was I was supposed to get Rachel. Why did you trick me? V'lama rimisani. And here, in a comeuppance, in a turnaround play, Vayomer Lavan, Lavan says, Lo yaseh chen bimkomenu. We don't do it this way in our village. Latei tatzi'ira lefnei habechira, that the younger goes before the older. Right? What did Yaakov do to Esav? Yaakov, who was the younger, came before the older. And here is perhaps an implied or an unwitting rebuke to Yaakov. Okay, so that's deal number two. Deal number two. All right, deal number three, Pasuk 27. Vayomer malei shavu azos, v'ninna lecha gam azos b'avodah asher tavodim adi od sheva shanim acheros. Wait a week, you'll work another 7 years, and you can marry Leah as well. You can marry Rachel as well. That's deal number three. And indeed, Vayas Yaakov Cain, Vayimalei Shavu Azos, Vayitein Les Rachel Es Bito Leisha. Okay, let's skip now a little. And now we have the whole situation with Rachel and Leah having children. We spoke a little bit about Rachel's dialogue and about her self-definition, what it means to be a Jewish woman. And in turn to Pasuk, chapter 30, Pasuk 14, Vayelech Reuven b'mei katzir chitim, and Reuven, during the harvest season, finds these mandrakes, the dudaim, in the field. He brings them to Leah, his mother. And Rachel says to Leah, Tnina li midudae b'nech. Give me from your son's mandrakes. Vatomer la, hama'at kach teches yeshiv, lakaches gam midudae b'ni. You want to have my husband, and now you also want the mandrakes? Tomer Rachel, and Rachel says, "Lachen yishkavi machalayla tachas tuda ebanech, tachas duda ebanech." I'll make you a deal. give me the mandrakes, and you can be with Yaakov this evening. So here, Yaakov is not making the deal, he's the object of the deal. He comes home from a hard day's work, and she says, and Leah says to him, you come to my tent tonight because I have purchased you. I have leased you. You're on the clock. Sachor secharticha bedudae bini. I paid for you. And indeed, they were intimate on that night. And from that union, Yisachar is born. Okay. So here, he's not so much making a deal, but he's the object of a deal. Pasuk 25. And it was when Rachel finally gives birth to the final child. So Yaakov says to Lavan, Shalcheni ve'alcha melki ula artsi. Send me forth. I'm going, you know, I'm done over here. We've been here for 15 years. It's time to go. We've been here for 20 years. According to the traditional understanding, he worked for another 6 years. Well, actually, no, he's not going to work for 6 years. So, Tanaz Nashai Vesila Dais Hashar Avadati. I've worked with you for 14, time to go. Yomer Lav Lavan, and Lavan says, I've done so well with you being my employer, my employee. Tell me, name me your price, and I will pay you. Stick around. Deal number five. Fifth deal. Let's make a deal. And Yaakov says, Pasuk 29, you know that I have worked for you all this time, and I've done well by you. Kimat asher v'yifrotz lev v'yivarech Hashem oschal l'raglai. Says, what can I give you? I don't want anything, says Yaakov. I don't want anything. But I'll tell you what, if you're pushing me to the wall, I got a deal for you. And this is the deal. Deal number six, right? Deal number six. Now we go, you know, with the striped ones and the dotted ones and the dotted ones and the striped ones. And he cuts a deal. And they agree. Pasuk 34, Vayomer Lavan, Hain, Lu, Yehiyeh, Edvaracha. As you wish. Done. The deal is done. Vayasar Vayomahu Esati Hashim Akudim. And now Yaakov proceeds to make sure that the deal works out in his favor, and he makes sure to breed either the spotted ones or the striped ones, whatever it is, whatever it is, he makes sure that the deal works out in his favor. Chapter 31, let's skip. Chapter 31. Vayishma estivrei b'nei Lavan lemor. The children of Lavan hear about the great success that Yaakov is having. Yar Yaakov is Pnei Lavan, and Yaakov sees Lavan, and he sees that Lavan is not looking so favorably upon Yaakov anymore. The son-in-law, father-in-law relationship has finally soured. It was bound to happen at some point, and it happened. I shouldn't say it was bound to happen. Vayomer Hashem el Yaakov, and Hashem says to Yaakov, Shuv el eretz avosecha l'mal la'adetecha ve'yei imach. Yah, Hashem says to Yaakov, time for you to go home. Vayishlach Yaakov, Yaakov calls to Rachel and Leah. Vayomer lahen, and he says to them, I see that your father no longer looks favorably upon me. Hashem has been with me. And you all know, ki b'kol kochi avadati es avichen, I've been loyal all this time, you know that. And, your father has switched the terms of the deal multiple times. First, he said the Nikudim, and then he said the Akudim. But in the end of the day, I made it work for me with Hashem's help. An angel of Hashem said in a dream to me the other night, Kiraisa kolasher lavanos elach anochi akel beisel asher mashachta sham kum tzei min haaretz hazos v'shuv al haaretz moladetecha. An angel came to me at night and said, it's time to go home. You've done everything. And Rachel says, Vatan Rachel v'leah, Rachel and Leah say, ha'od lanu chelek v'nachala b'veis avinu. We don't think we have a place in our father's home anymore. And so they proceed to make their way out of Lavan's house. Pasuk 18. Vayinhages kol miknehu v'eskol rechusho asher achash. Laval Yitzchak Aviv Arza Kanan. Yaakov assembled all of his material wealth and he began his trek back home. Now Lavan went to shear his sheep. Vatiknov Rachel Esatrafim. Rachel steals the idols. Vayignov Yaakov Eslev Lavan, and Yaakov stole the confidence or the trust of Lavan. And he runs away. Pasuk 23, Vayikacha Yaakov Ayudof Acharav, he runs after Yaakov. Pasuk 26, he catches up to him, and he says to Yaakov, Me'asisa v'tignov eslevavi, why did you steal my heart? A lot of stealing going on over here. V'tinaheges b'nosai, kishvuyos cherev, you've abducted my daughters. Lama nachbesa livroach v'tignovosi, why did you steal from me? Pasuk 30, he answers, "Ata haloch halachti ki nichsof nichsafta leves avicha lama ganavta es Elohai." So I'm sorry. So Lavan says, "Why did you steal my idols?" And Yaakov responds, "Listen to this: Ki aresi ki amarti pentigzol es benosecha meimi. I was concerned that you would steal your daughters back from me." He doesn't say Hashem told me to leave. He says, I was concerned, Yaresi, I was concerned that you were going to steal your daughters back. Why didn't he just say, Hashem told me to go? Take a look around, see if you can find your idols. You're not going to find them anywhere. And the person who took them, will be given the death penalty, will not live. Now, he didn't know that, of course, that Rachel took the trophim. But Tomer El Aviha, she says to her father, I can't get off the camel, I'm in a certain feminine way. So she hides the idols. Vayichar LeYaakov, Vayarev B'Lavan, they fight with one another. Yaakov says to Lavan, what did I do so bad to you that you're coming after me? And then the final deal of the parsha. Take a look at skip to pasuk 43. Vayan Lavan vayomer Yaakov habanos benosai v'abenim banai v'atzon tzoni v'chol asher atar elihu v'livnosai ma'es ela ela hayom olivnehem asher yaladu. Lavan says to Yaakov, it all belongs to me. Ve'ata l'cha nechrita bris ani v'ata. Let's make a deal. Let you and me, Yaakov, make a deal. Ve'heye la'ed b'ni u'b'necha, and there will be a deal between us that neither of us will cause harm to the other. And in fact, they do so. Vayizbach Yaakov, pasuk 54. Vayizbach Yaakov zevach bahar. Vayikra lechav lechalecha. Vayochlu lechem vayalino bahar. He gives an offering. They celebrate the deal. Vayashkem Lavan baboker. Lavan gets up in the morning, and he blesses them. And Lavan goes back home. Yaakov goes on his journey. Vayifku b'malachei Elokim. And the angels of Hashem meet him now on the journey back home. And Yaakov again sees these angels, and he reflects that in the name of the place called Machanayim. Okay, the Machane Elokim, which is Machanayim. Okay, so we did a lot of reading, as I promised you we would. And my essential question is, what's with all the deals? This parsha is basically one deal after another. We have Yaakov making a deal with Hashem in the beginning, right? We have Yaakov making a deal with Lavan for Rachel. Yaakov making a deal with Lavan for Rachel again. We have Yaakov being the object of the deal between Rachel and Leah. We have a deal being made to stay on additional years to work for Lavan. We have the deal of the you know, the back and forth, the striped ones, the you know, Yaakov, Lavan changes the terms of the deal once, he changes the terms of the deal a second time. So the deal is constantly being renegotiated. And then at the end, we have one more deal after the whole stealing of the idols. We have one more deal, and that is the deal between Lavan and Yaakov, that they will respect one another and not harm one another. So I ask you, what's going on with these deals? What's going on here? What's the message? What's the idea? Has anybody ever? Yeah, go ahead, Paula.
All these deals and whatever happened in this parsha shows the human aspect of all these people.
I agree.
They were not nice, and they lied several times. So it shows the human aspect of Rachel and Yaakov and Laban. That's what I think.
Okay. All right. So we see here the human frailty of these people coming into full relief. Okay? All right. I hear that. Judy, what do you have on your mind? You have anything baking?
And not any answers. I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Start out with this whole spiritual moment of he has this dream and suddenly, aha, I get it. That the earth is holy, and then there's a series of unholy deals. So right. What happened to his aha moment?
Right. I think that's an excellent question. I think that's an excellent question. Right. We'll come back to that in a minute, but I think that is an excellent question. Right. Anybody else? Yeah, go ahead, Marjorie.
It seems like in this world you have to negotiate your way. You have to make deals.
Okay, so Marjorie is saying that there's a reality that has to be addressed, and when you deal with Lavan, who you know changed the nature of the deal, you know you can't be the sucker. This is, I guess, you know. You have to deal with a Lavan with, you know, there's a joke that somebody once told me. It says, there's a guy who was a not such a successful businessman. And he tried his hand at different things. One day, he goes over to, he decides he's going to go into the shmata business. So he goes into the marketplace and he asks a wholesaler to sell him some shmata, some cloth. So he says, okay. He says, how much is it? He says, it's $20. He says, I'll give you 10. He says, it's really worth 20. So he says, be'emuna? I mean, like, can I trust that that's really the truth? And the wholesaler says, yes, be'emuna. This is not worth less than 20. Okay. He pays $20. Then he goes out to the marketplace to resell it now to a retailer, you know, to a retail customer. So a guy comes to him and says, how much is it? So he says, it's 25. You know, the guy's got to make a little money on it. He says, it's 25. He says, this isn't worth more than 15. So the seller says to the buyer, be'emuna? And I trust that this is really the truth. It's not worth more than 15. And the buyer says, yes, be'emunah. Okay, so he sells it for 15. Lightning strikes, he dies, he goes up to heaven, and he's standing before the heavenly court. And we know that when a person is standing before the heavenly court, the first question that Hashem will ask every individual is, Nasata v'nasasa be'emunah. Did you conduct your financial affairs, your business affairs, with integrity, be'emunah? Did you conduct yourself be'emunah? So the guy looks up to Hashem, and he says, Hashem, I know it says that you say, Nasata v'nasata be'emunah, that you have to conduct yourself be'emunah, but that's no way to make a living. All right. So, you know, so it's a little bit, you know, when you deal with halacha, okay, so you have to, you can't just be naive about things. Okay, anybody else? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so in Paraglav Nal of Pasuk Chaf, maybe you test the Chaf, it says, first it says, Vatignov Rachel, and then it says, Vayignov Yaakov. So it just sounds like, you know, everybody, you know, I learned that when Yaakov was living with Lavan, you know, he stuck to his morality and everything. And it just sounds weird to me that here it says, Vatignov Rachel, Vayignov Yaakov.
Right.
And it sounds like very similar to what Lavan was doing all along.
Right, right. So I agree with you. So we have here somewhat of a confounding conundrum, as Judy laid it out earlier. On the one hand, we have this moment of great clarity, of great vision, at the beginning of the parsha, by Yirav, Manora Hamakom Hazeh, Ein Zeh Ki Bezachim, V'Zeh Shar HaShamayim. As I explained it, he understood that that you know Hashem is even here. Hashem is here. Hashem is here. Hashem is there. Hashem is truly everywhere. And then he goes on and he you know cuts all these deals, which you know somewhat challenging. So I'm going to revise. Let's look at that opening pasuk. Let's look at an opening pasuk, chapter 28, pasuk 16. Vayikatz Yaakov mishnaso, Yaakov awoke from his slumber. Vayomer achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. Behold, there is God in this place. Vanochi lo yadati, and I was not aware of it. He did have an epiphany of sorts. Vayira, and he had great awe and reverence for this place. Vayomar, and he says, Manora hamakom hazeh. It's the second time. He says, how amazing is this place? Ein zeh, this, ki im beis Elokim. There is no place that is a portal to Hashem, but this place. V'zeh shar ha-shamayim. And this is the portal to heavens. So when we read the pasuk initially, it sounded like Yaakov had an amazing epiphany. And he did have an epiphany of sorts to understand that maybe God was with him and that, you know, and this was a special place. But it was a limited epiphany. He says in this pasuk, three times in the pasuk, Zeh hamakom. God is in this place. Manor hamakom hazeh. How amazing is this place? Vizeh, and this place is a portal, is Ishara Shamayim. Meaning that Yaakov missed out on a lesson here. He didn't chap that Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. I mean, maybe to the extent that Hashem would protect him, but sort of missing the point that there has to be the guidance of Hashem, the divine consciousness and awareness everywhere. And when having sort of this bifurcated state where Hashem is confined to the shul, Hashem is confined to the holy space. Zeh hamakom. Zeh shar hashamayim. Manor hamakom hazeh. This place is Beis Elokim. When a person lives with that cognitive dissonance, if you will, God is over there, which means that over here, I can conduct myself differently. Over there, you know, when I make a pledge in shul, I'm going to be honest about it. But when I'm in my business fight, my business dealings, you know, that's going to be a little different. And so there, he starts cutting deals right and left. He starts cutting deals right and left. And his first deal is with Hashem. And even though we translated it initially as "Im God, you when you will be with me and everything will turn," but on a pshat level, this neder that he makes is a conditional neder. He is saying, that if you will be with me, conditionally, if you will be with me, then and only. If you will be with me, then and only then will I give Meiser. In other words, Yaakov walks out of this dream, and when this dream should have been an epiphany of Hashem dealing with everything going forward, it ends up as a dream which he learns the lesson that Hashem is confined to a certain place. And he becomes the deal maker, cutting his first deal with Hashem. And isn't this what he did? So that's deal number one. Deal number two is, how do I say it gently? He is being bit with the same teeth that he bit Esav. He cut a deal with Esav, which might have been technically and legally fine, but at the end of the day, he got the Bechora out of him. And this first deal here between with Lavan and Rachel and Leah, Lavan says to him, we don't do that kind of thing here. We don't put the younger before the older. We don't make those deals here. Now, Lavan was no great guy either. And Lavan swindles him. So he gets the same treatment, in essence, that he tried to do to Esav and the treatment that he tried to do to Yitzchak, his father. Right? On a pshat level, he swindled his father. So Yaakov is getting what was due to him, given that he failed. In other words, this all happens after the dream. If the dream had not yet happened, then maybe you could say, maybe he didn't deserve all this. But this is, I believe, Mida Keneged Mida, because he failed to understand the message of the dream. And then he has the next deal. He cuts the deal. Then he becomes the object of a deal. How bad is that? You're not even making the deal anymore. He's now just the object of the deal. This is like all Mida Keneged Mida. This is a just payment, if you will, for the last parsha, when he conducted himself in a less than open and honest way with Yitzchak, and even if he was honest with his brother Esav, maybe it wasn't the most ethical thing around. Again, I know we can interpret all of this in a very different way, but I'm just taking it on this pshat level right now. And then deal number five, he stays on with Lavan, and he cuts a deal with Lavan, and technically he's following the contract. He's not doing anything which is not in the contract, but he makes sure that the contract works in his favor, right? He breeds the animals to make sure that he. That he benefits from it. So all these deals, it might be technically okay. So that leads us ultimately to leaving the home of Lavan. And when he leaves the home of Lavan, as Barbara pointed out, it says multiple times. Actually, I don't know if it says multiple times, but it says enough times. Vatignov Rachel, Rachel steals the idols, Vayignov Yaakov, and Yaakov steals the heart, in other words, the trust of Lavan, by running away. Pasuk 26, Lavan says, why did you steal? Why did you steal my heart? Why did you run away and steal from me? And you stole my eye. So we end up here. Yaakov doesn't even know that he is the cause, or that he is... Yaakov doesn't even realize that it is his household that has stolen from Lavan. In other words, when you live this way, when you live either crossing the line or on the line, it has an impact on you. Right? There's something in linguistics called linguistic determinism. I've mentioned this many times. Linguistic determinism means that the language that we use has an impact on our minds, on our thoughts, on our personalities. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Spanish and German, Pola in Spanish is the word bridge, female or masculine, feminine or masculine. Is the what? You're on mute.
Masculine.
Okay, in German, the word bridge is a feminine word. So some researchers did a study, and they asked the German speakers to describe the bridge. And the German speakers used stereotypical feminine words. It was a beautiful bridge, a sleek bridge, words that are stereotypically feminine. Then they asked the Spanish speakers to describe the very same picture of a bridge, and they used stereotypically masculine words, like it was a strong and sturdy bridge. It was it was a tall bridge. It was so the words that we use, the language that we use, it does not only enable us to communicate, but actually causes an impact on how we think and perceive life. That's just one example of it. It's not just true, and if it's true with the words that we use, it is most certainly true with the actions that we take. Yaakov Avinu, in this parsha, he's cutting all these deals. At some point, you can't con a con man. At some point, you can con the con man, because the person is no longer, I'm not saying that he was a con man, but I'm saying at some point you become tainted by your own ethically questionable behavior, and it gets to the point that you don't even know what you did. You stole the truffim and you didn't even know it. You stole the avodah zarah. You didn't even know it. Now, it wasn't Yaakov per se, but it was his household. That means that he conducted himself in such a way that Geneva was thievery was not out of bounds. It could be bent. The line could be bent. The line could be made gray, and you end up stealing people's trust and stealing their stuff. So I think that that Judy asked the essential question: what happened? He had this aha moment, and then we have a whole parsha of these deals, and then the final deal with Lavan, that we're not gonna cause each other any harm. So who's he making a deal with here? Like Joe Gambino is making a deal with one mobster is making a deal with another mobster. Like again, Lahavdil. I'm not saying he's a mobster, but I'm saying, you have there's honor amongst thieves. Is that what this is? Who's he making a deal with over here? But this is like on Heichan Higanu, where until how low have we sunk? That here he's making a deal with Lavan. He's making a deal with Lavan. This is the company that he keeps. Vayomer Lavan LiYaakov. Lavan says to Yaakov, "This monument will be between us as a covenant." Elokei Avraham, Elokei Nachor yishpatu beinenu. Lavan says, "The God of Avraham and the God of Nachor, Avram's brother Nachor, right, will stand between us." Vayishava Yaakov befachad aviv Yitzchak. And perhaps this is a turning point for Yaakov. Just maybe this is a turning point. Sometimes you go so low, you hit rock bottom, and you realize there's nowhere else to go but up. And so here he is cutting a deal with Lavan. This is his interlocutor. This is his business partner. This is the guy. And Lavan says to him, we're going to make a deal with Elokei Avraham and Elokei Nachor, the God of Avraham and Nachor. Now the God of Nachor is not the same God as Avraham. And maybe in this moment, Yaakov is like, whoa, is this where I've come to? That I'm going to cut a deal on Elohei Avraham and Elohei Nachor? Vayishava Yaakov b'fachad aviv Yitzchak. And Yaakov makes a vow. He swears. B'fachad aviv Yitzchak. By the God of his father Yitzchak. There is no ambiguity here. Elohei Avraham, Elohei Nachor. And he begins his ascent back up. Vayizbach Yaakov zevach bahar ve'ikra lechav lechal lechem. Vayochlu lechem vayalinu bahar. He calls them up the mountain. He gathers them all together. And they celebrate this covenant. But this covenant was made by swearing by Hashem. Lavan gets up, and now they separate. It's not just that they make this deal. They separate from one another. Lavan goes back to his place. You know where his place is? A place of thievery, of unethical deal-making. The Yaakov halach lidarko. And Yaakov now goes on his journey. His journey where? Back home to Yitzchak. In other words, back home. He had a very long detour. But that long detour was maybe necessary in order for him to grow to become the Eved Hashem that he needs to become. Vayomer Yaakov kashera. And vayifgo bo malachei Elohim. He encounters angels of Hashem. He encountered angels of Hashem on the way out, and he's encountering angels of Hashem now on the way out from Lavan. Vayikras shem vayomer Yaakov kasher ra'am machane Elohim ze vayikras shem hamakom hahu machanayim, and he calls this place Machanayim. And he realizes that he's in that place, and now Yaakov is ready to go back home. Now Yaakov is ready to go back home to meet Esav. Until now, until this point, he was really in the house of Lavan. He was deep in the house of Lavan. He had left unwittingly, and with this we'll conclude, he had left unwittingly the house of Yitzchak behind. Right? Zeh ha-makom. Achein yesh ha-makom ba-makom ha-zeh. Zeh, zeh, zeh. God was in that place. That's the portal. And now he realizes, Vayomer Yaakov, when he sees the angels, he says, Machane Elohim Zeh. This is also a place, a machane. You know what the difference between a portal, sha'ar, and a machane, and a camp is? A portal means that you have a sha'ar, a gate to a place. If you want to meet Hashem, you got to go through that gate. A machane, a camp? A camp could be anywhere. A camp, you could be out in the desert. You could be out in the field. You can, I mean, not in the city, but in other words, a camp could be anywhere. Anywhere where you gather people. That's an encampment. And that's what he sees. Kasher ra'a machane Elohim zeh. He sees God in this encampment. Vayikra shem ha-makom ha-hu machanayim. Machane Elohim, machanayim. Machane Elohim means the camp of God. A camp can be anywhere. And this is the journey of self-awareness that Yaakov has to go through in order to ultimately come back to Eretz Yisrael. He left Eretz Yisrael, yes, to, ostensibly to find a wife. He left Eretz Yisrael because not to be killed, devoured by Esav. But the truth of the matter is, Esav wouldn't have killed him anyway. Because as long as Yitzchak was around, so as long as Yitzchak is around, he was protected, and so Yaakov goes on this journey, not so much for anything else, other than for Yaakov to become the person who has to become. Now, his journey isn't entirely over, but he is now on the way back. All this time, he was on the road away, and now he's on the road back. And the difference between the road away and the road back is Zeshar HaShamayim. The portal of Hashem is in one place and one place only, versus Machanayim, understanding the presence of Hashem is anywhere. Anywhere, as Barbara said in the name of the Kotzker Rebbe, Hashem is anywhere where we let Him in. And that is the life that we, like Yaakov before us, are meant to live. Okay, we'll pause here. Any comments or questions? Judy, yeah, go ahead.
Any comments? One is that a portal is something you move through, and a machaneh is something you stay in.
Okay.
So,